The recording to follow this introduction is a copy of an old disc recording made on February 14, 1941, at 11:30 p.m. at Hartford, Connecticut, taken from an FM receiver tuned to the FM transmitter at Paxton, Massachusetts. The material recorded was a test of a rebroadcasting system for FM stations being developed by a group of New England radio stations in conjunction with the experimental FM station of Major Armstrong at Alpine, New Jersey. The New England stations involved in this test were as follows. 1. An FM station on top of Mount Washington in New Hampshire, owned and operated by the Yankee Network. 2. An FM station at Paxton, Massachusetts, of high power, also owned and operated by the Yankee Network. And 3. An FM station on top of Meriden Mountain at Meriden, Connecticut, owned and operated by radio station WDRC of Hartford. This was the first commercial FM station in existence, pioneered by WDRC's president, Franklin M. Doolittle, who was the inventor of stereo broadcasting. And the fourth station involved, which was not in New England, was the experimental FM station of Major Edwin H. Armstrong at Alpine, New Jersey. The FM station at Mount Washington normally rebroadcast the programs of its sister station at Paxton, Massachusetts, the programming for the Paxton station originating at Boston studios of the Yankee Network and carried to Paxton by a special FM link circuit. The programming of WDRC's FM station at Meriden Mountain in Connecticut was normally from the WDRC Harper studios and also consisted of rebroadcasts of the program material from Major Armstrong's experimental station at Alpine, New Jersey, and rebroadcasts of program material of the Paxton, Massachusetts station of the Yankee Network. All of these transmitters operated in the 40 megacycle band of frequencies. This was before an attempt was made to kill FM broadcasting by other broadcast interests due to profit motives and fear of competition by means of legislating FM broadcasting to a group of higher frequencies and reduced power. In 1941, the power of the Paxton transmitter was in the order of 50 kilowatts fed into a special type of turnstile antenna designed by the chief engineer of the Yankee Network, Paul DeMars. With the gain of this antenna and its elevation on Mount Asney Bumpskit at Paxton, Massachusetts near Worcester, the resulting coverage was tremendous. The power of the sister station's transmitter on top of Mount Washington was much less, but effective coverage was obtained due to the high location. The FM transmitter of WDRC at Meriden Mountain in Connecticut delivered around 1 kilowatt into a 6-bay turnstile antenna located at a height of approximately 1,000 feet above sea level. Good coverage was obtained under these circumstances. The FM transmitter of Major Armstrong at Alpine, New Jersey, across the Hudson River from Yonkers, New York, was around 50 kilowatts feeding a turnstile antenna located on a high steel tower on high ground above the Hudson River. Major Edwin H. Armstrong, FM's inventor, along with the pioneer FM broadcasters in New England, wished to develop an FM network of high quality without the necessity of using telephone lines to link the stations together, as is commonly done with network operation, resulting in loss of quality and resulting in added expense of operation from rental of these lines. The plan in mind was to have each station in the FM network simply rebroadcast its adjacent station, which would require no special equipment other than a good FM receiver. Such a rebroadcasting procedure would be feasible because of the high quality available from FM transmissions as compared to those of ordinary AM broadcasting. In addition, FM broadcasting would be free of any interfering noise, whereas AM broadcasting is not. On February 14, 1941, a test of the possibilities of such a network was conducted by the FM stations at Alpine, New Jersey, Meriden Mountain in Connecticut, Paxton, Massachusetts, and Mount Washington in New Hampshire. A conversation between Major Armstrong at New York and the engineers stationed at Mount Washington was carried on by relay by all four of the stations, the voices from the top of Mount Washington being heard in New York City by way of relay from Mount Washington through Paxton, through Meriden, and through Alpine, New Jersey. Major Armstrong's voice was the only one that was not broadcast as high fidelity quality because of the fact that in order to converse with the engineers at Mount Washington, he had to be linked into the Paxton transmitter over an ordinary telephone toll circuit with its restricted response. He was talking from New York City for this demonstration. The persons involved in these FM engineering tests were not professionally trained speakers or entertainers, ordinarily used in radio broadcasting, but highly trained experts in the technical development of frequency modulation broadcasting, whose professions were engineering skill and not public speaking. Also at Mount Washington, in addition to the engineering experts, there were experts in the art of survival at that location in the hazardous winter months, where the temperature drops far below zero and the winds exceed 100 miles an hour at times. The excerpts to follow, taken from the disc recording made on February 14, 1941, from an FM receiver located at Hartford, Connecticut, and tuned to the FM transmitter at Paxton, Massachusetts, are quite scratchy at times. This is due to the age of the original disc recording, which had become brittle and deteriorated. Therefore, it is not possible to appreciate the actual quietness of the original FM tests of 1941. There is also on the original disc some hum that came from the original recording equipment at Hartford, but which was not on the original FM test. Even with these restrictions to full appreciation of the FM tests, the recording is of interest historically because it contains the voices of some of the famous FM pioneers, including that of Major Edwin H. Armstrong, who, in addition to being the inventor of FM, also has many other important inventions to his credit, one of which is the superheterodyne circuit, which is basic to all radio receivers in use today, FM, AM, and television. We now hear Major Armstrong speaking from New York City over the FM test setup, asking the engineer at the FM station on Mount Washington about the wind velocity on the mountain.
Have you had anything up around 200 miles an hour this year?
No, we haven't. The highest we've had is 144 in gust wind so far this year. And that was when our temperature got down to 30 below zero. It was a pretty bad then out there. You couldn't stay out very long. The big thing, one of the boy here froze his face three times, and he was not out more than 5 minutes at each time. The wind would do that to you. With that low temperature, you wouldn't even feel it as far as that go. Only when you come into the building, though, we always look each one that come in to see that nothing was froze, because you could see right off white patches over their face. So we used to take snow and wash them right away, so they wouldn't be too bad.
Well, I'm going to have another try at the mountain a little while later, in the early part of March. And I hope you'll pick a time for me when we don't have weather like that.
Well, you know, Major, March is kind of a tough month, as a rule, because we have plenty of snow in March, and generally our March snow is the greatest of the year. You take here in 37, we had 82.8 inches in March. That was the greatest snowfall in 1 month. So if you do, prepare to come up either snowshoes or skis.
I think I'll stick to the snowshoes.
Well, they are a good...
Let Al Seiss take the skis.
He's not bad at all on skis. Very good. But I prefer the skis. They're much quicker going down.
Yes, so they tell me.
It takes me about an hour and a half to go down, an hour and a half. If I don't have to walk too much, if I got to walk, say, 4 or 5 miles before I put on the skis, then I generally go 2 hours. But if I can put on the skis fairly well up, anywhere between an hour to an hour and a half, I'll get down okay.
You know, changing the subject, Lafayette, it just is hardly possible to believe that you're on Mount Washington. As a matter of fact, you're right here in the room with us.
Well, you sound the same way up here, too, Major. I would think, really, that you was right here with us, and well, even we're that long distance apart.
Well, of course, my voice is handicapped by going over the landline to Boston.
Yeah.
But you your voice comes the whole way by radio relay.
Oh, it does, huh?
Yes, and every inflection of it is right here with us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's very good, then.
Is Uncas up there? Or
yes,
is he
he's right here with me in the radio room. He's coming over.
Well, put him on.
Yeah, here he is.
Hello, Major.
Hello, Uncas.
Glad to hear you again.
Well, I'd recognize your voice here. I wouldn't take anyone's word that this was coming over four jumps if I didn't know that the circuit was set up in that way.
I expect you to walk in the door any minute, the way you sound.
You know, the noise level on this circuit must be down at least 50 dB. It's perfectly quiet.
Gee, we'd never tried this setup before, and it took us a little bit to get warmed up and to see what we do here. That's why it acted a little funny when we started it going this evening.
Was it up at your end?
Well, we had our gains too high because we just didn't know what to set it on for the start. Never been hooked up before, you see.
Mm. Well, there's nothing the matter with it now, and now that we've got it set up, sometime when you have one of these 150-mile-an-hour winds, I'd like to hear that wind here in New York, I mean. We'll set it up again and pipe it down here. You know, in the early days of the Transcontinental Line, the telephone company set up a circuit so that the people who lived on the East Coast could hear the safe on the West Coast. And those who lived on the West Coast could hear the Eastern safe. But there are very few people that have heard the winds of Mount Washington. And I think sometime the next month or so, we ought to set it up and put it out over one of the major networks.
Sure makes quite a racket when it goes by.
Well, I was up there one night when it when it averaged 100 miles an hour, and that was loud enough for me.
Yeah, you've heard what it's like, then.
The only thing that'll really describe it is by likening it to riding in an express train with the windows open and going by a long freight on the next track in the opposite direction.
That sounds just about like it. Yep.
It never lets up.
It's a long freight train.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you sometime in March, Uncas. I think I can make it once again this year. But pick me a good day.
Gee, I sure hope you get up about when they have the Inferno race down the mountain, the big ski race. All Sice goes in that, usually.
What's the date of it?
Well, that depends on the weather. It's around the third week in March, on a weekend.
Well, I'll try and make it about that time.
I see.
Well, now, if you'll just hold on a bit here, we'll pass down the line to Paxton and ask Mac what kind of weather he's got there, and then after that we'll pass on to Meriden Mountain and finally to Alpine, and then I'm going to get Paul in on the wire. Hello, Paxton.
Hello, Howard.
Mac?
No, it's Robbie.
Oh, Robbie. My word. How could I mistake your voice?
I happen to be standing right here, Max, in the other room.
Well, Robbie, this is unbelievably good.
Yes, it sounded pretty good here.
For first try, it's a lot better than I hoped.
So far, the only discordant note that I could detect wasn't of our doing, but of our friend, the telephone company.
Yes, I'm afraid I lost my temper there when they rang in my ear. Robbie, are you icing up any?
Well, a little, Howard. We got about a half an inch of ice on everything. I had a little trouble coming up the road earlier this evening, but it's dense fog, temperature about 31. Just enough so that it's adding up all the time.
I see you didn't even think that I was referring to the possibility of you getting standing waves on that antenna of Paul's.
Oh, no, I haven't been able to detect any. I've been out and felt the lines over several times today. I don't see that they behave any different during this than they have any other time.
Well, I guess we'll have to join you one of these days in that type of antenna at Alpine.
Well, get yourself a good plumber.
Righto. Well, Robbie, we'll leave you for a minute, and I'm going to call John Denny at Meriden Mountain and ask him if he'll make a report on the weather there, and then I'm going to follow that up with Alpine and then come back to Paul again.
Well, okay, I'll see you later.
Hello, Meriden.
We were unable to hear the reply of Meriden because of the fact that the receiver feeding the original disc recorder back in 1941 was tuned to the Paxton station. So we'll now jump over this part of the test and go back to where Major Armstrong converses again with Paxton. Incidentally, that crunching sound in the background was some kind of interference in the telephone line that connected Major Armstrong in New York with the transmitter at Paxton. The next voice is that of Paul DeMars, speaking from the Boston studios over the FM link, where he was cut into the test circuit at the Paxton transmitter.
I'm in an office in Boston.
And,
Howard, for the benefit of the boys on Mount Washington, I want to refresh your memory about an attempt that was made not so long ago to climb a little mountain in Massachusetts. Have you forgotten?
Well, why bring that up?
Well, I don't think we ought to keep it quiet any longer.
Well, Paul, but that was the fault of the automobile and not the fellows who were in it.
Well, I'll check that.
How many days did it take to get them to get that car down again?
Well, I think it took a full day of rather ticklish work, if I remember, to get it back.
Well, next time I climb a mountain with you in an automobile, I'm going to have my crampons in my pocket.
Well, I think we needed them that night, all right. If I remember, each of us did a tailspin on several occasions.
I never fell down so many times in one evening in my life.
I think you recognize probably some of the characteristic disturbance on this circuit is entering through the telephone line. And I think it might be worthwhile, while everything is all set up, to cut that and give you and the people along the line an opportunity to see the improvement on the radio circuit. So I'm going to cut that for just a few minutes.
You're going to cut me out.
That will cut you out.
Yes, all right.
You are now cut off from the circuit, and the only the radio relay is involved. The listeners to all of the FM stations are now hearing the radio circuit only and not the telephone line tied in, which is contributing the larger part of the disturbance that was formerly on the circuit. I think that's sufficient. Hello, Howard.
Yes, Paul. The hum dropped out immediately.
Yes, and then on this end there was what was apparently proximity to a facsimile. Before we take the circuit down, I'd like to talk to the mountain. If you don't mind standing by for a minute. Hello, Mount Washington.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Lafayette.
Good evening, Paul.
Well, how are the diesels? Are they purring along like kittens?
Oh, gee, them two diesels are sweetheart.
Well, that's fine. And
those are my two children, you know. I got to keep them going in very good shape.
Yes.
We have no trouble whatsoever so far with the diesel. Long you change the oil, I've been changing the oil regular in them and checking them every 2 days.
Fine.
And every day, of course, I always look them over.
Yeah.
To see everything's all right. I always do that after midnight.
Well, Tellington came down with some very good pictures, so I had my first opportunity to see the installation in that manner.
Oh, you did, huh?
Looks all right. Looks fine.
Yeah.
Lafayette, I think some of us are interested in sort of what you might call the domestic problems, the little problems of living up there. So I'm going to put Mrs. DeMars on the line, and she can ask you about...
Yeah? All right.
Hello, Lafayette.
Good evening, Mrs. DeMars.
I don't think I've ever really met you, have I?
Yes, we have met at Paxton.
Oh, up at Paxton. Oh, yes, I remember.
Yeah.
Well, Paul wants me to ask you, I suppose he means he wants to know how about the dish towels. Last time we were up there, Mrs. Armstrong and one of the other ladies and I had to do a little bit of washing.
Well, you know, we done that this week. We had dish towel week.
Oh, that's fine.
That's right. Well, we had quite a bunch here. Oh, there's probably 10 of them, I guess. So.
Yes.
We took a forenoon off and washed dish towel.
Well, that's fine. Well, then we won't be afraid to go up again.
No, they're all washed nice and clean now, ready for use.
All right, then I expect we'll be up in the early summer. And I suppose that will be just the next wash day.
That's just about right.
Well, I'll let Paul talk to you now because I know
it's
time to hang up soon. Hang up, you don't hang up.
Hello, Lafayette.
Yes, Paul.
I don't think that perhaps you never were told about that famous trip up there a couple of years ago, but it made quite an impression, as you can see.
Yeah. Paul, do you want to know what we have here on the line of food and of meat? I made up a little list here today. What we still have on hand.
Say, that's a fine subject to a fellow that's starving to death. I've only had two meals today.
Well, that's
you
all...
You asked me to talk about food.
Yes, well, that's all I eat is two meals up here. Two meals a day.
Well, I had only two light meals.
Oh, two light meals. Well, I had a good heavy one for supper.
I was afraid of that. Why, I don't know, do you mean that there's a question about the food supply that should be discussed?
Well, I thought probably you would be interested where what we have on hand and where we keep our meat and as far as our canned goods. We have quite a stock of ham, chicken, beef, lamb, pork, sausage, bacon, all on hand. We still have enough, I think, for the middle of the summer. And we may have to start the refrigerator plant going before spring when it warms up because we have so much meat on hand.
Listen, if you keep the door of the Summit House closed, that'll stay below freezing until the middle of June at least.
Well, we keep it closed at all times.
Well, then you're all safe.
You think we are? Yeah, look today. Of course, in the ice box there, it'd be all okay. Even today, we're around 31.
Yeah.
And we have a lot of canned food. We have plenty of that, too. So, you know, only to be a cook up here, all you got to be a good can opener and be able to cut a piece of meat.
I see.
Because it's froze very stiff. And it takes a good man on the saw.
I see.
Because every week, every time we go cut a piece of beef, everybody leaves the beef over there. They say it's too much of a job to cut it because it's so big. And there's another thing we done the other day. We had a good Yankee Network steak.
Fine.
Just about 2 inches thick, each piece.
That's around 3 to 3.5 pounds.
Yes, well, it was a good one.
If it's any less than that, it wasn't a Yankee Network.
I know. I couldn't go my whole piece. The only man I think went his whole piece was Uncas here.
Well, could almost depend on his holding up his end of...
He can't be beat.
Any deal?
He can't be beat, you know.
Yeah.
I haven't seen nobody to beat him yet.
Good.
Oh, boy, he takes the cake up here.
Well, fine, Lafayette. It's a great pleasure to talk over this circuit and to know that the voices from the mountain are being heard almost perfectly all along the line at, from Paxton and from Meriden and in New York City.
Yeah, you sound just like you were sitting here in the room with me. You're very, just as clear as it can be. Can't ask for any better quality.
Well, as soon as you get that carriage road shoveled out, why, I'll be up there and start the new construction, which will result in the new 10-kilowatt apparatus and new living quarters for everybody on the mountain.
Well, then we'll be looking for you June 1st.
You bet.
Yes, sir.
So, give my regards to the boys, Lafayette, and I'll ask the major to come in for a few last words.
All right. I'll say good night, Paul.
Good night, Lafayette.
Well, Paul, I'll say good night, too, and I just want to thank the boys on Mount Washington, Mac at Paxton, John Denny at Meriden, and the boys at Alpine. And to say that the next time that we do this, I think we can have added in a few added innovations, which I'd like to talk over with you, Paul, out at Columbus.
All right, then it's a date.
When we get back, we'll do it again, and with the innovations that I mentioned.
All right,
good night, everybody.
Good night from Boston.
Good night, Major. This is Mount Washington.
And good night from Paxton. This is W1XOJ Boston, the frequency-modulated high-frequency broadcast station owned and operated by the Yankee Network with transmitting facilities at Paxton, Massachusetts. This concludes the broadcasting activities of W1XOJ for today. We will return to the air at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good night.